Hello, everyone, and good day, and welcome to episode 53 of This Week in Testing. So my name is Simon Tomes. I'm the community lead here at Ministry of Testing, and today I am co-hosting with AJ Wilson, trends lead at Ministry of Testing. So welcome, AJ. Always good to co-host with you today. So let's just get some introduction stuff clear so folks are kind of familiar with what we'll be up to today for the next hour. So this is an opportunity for us to gather, for us to have a good old conversation about your week in testing. Let us know what you've been up to. What things have you seen? What things have you read about? What things have you learned that perhaps you'd like to share with the rest of the audience? So we will, in about 10 or so minutes, invite you up on stage to have a chat with myself and AJ. But before we do that, a couple of things, just to remind folks that if you do come up on stage, we do have a code of conduct that we adhere to, which you can find on ministryoftesting.com. Look for the link for conduct in the footer. And this is recorded. So hello to all the listeners who are listening to this via our podcast. It's wonderful that you joined us. And also to our listeners who are listening live. Very, very excited to have you here today. Greg, I've just spotted that you've put your hand up. We will get to inviting folks up into the audience. So you can wait patiently with your hand up for about 10 or so minutes. Feel free to pop it down and then pop it back up a little bit later. And we will get back to you there, Greg. Thanks so much. Excellent. So what has been happening in This Week in Testing? Oh my goodness me. Well, lots of stuff happening in wider tech, of course, with the CrowdStrike incident, which we can come on to in a little bit. But before we do that, just as a reminder that the Ministry of Testing community, our network is your network, and we encourage people to tag the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page if they are open to work. And if you do so, we spot that you've tagged us, that you're open to work, and we will reshare it with our network. We really want to help folks find their next career opportunity. And interestingly, we put out a poll. We put it out every month just to see what the trends are when it comes to people looking for work. And the results came in today, literally about an hour or so ago. And of 1,432 people that replied to this poll, are you open to work? 84% of people said yes. So that's 1,203 people. And 60% said no. So yeah, kind of just to give you an awareness of what's happening in the kind of hiring market right now, some fascinating data there. But people who have tagged us, so Judy Mosley has been brilliant at tagging other people when Judy spots people looking for work. So they tag Joel Grimberg. Jamie Barnes is also looking open to work. Nicholas Hammond, Nino Ristic, and Roy Baker. So if you go on to Ministry Testing on the LinkedIn page, look at our posts and you will see us reposting. So you can go check out those people, see what skills and experiences they have and consider how they might help your team. Congratulations to Asma Mazamil. They are starting a new job as a QA lead at Code 94 Labs. But congrats to you there, Asma. Great news. And Squiz are a company that are hiring a test analyst for UI JavaScript. This role is based in Edinburgh, Scotland. So thanks to Deborah Sherwood for posting that job on the Ministry of Testing jobs board. So thinking about community, we've had a few new meetups go live actually, which is very cool. So we have a new meetup in Ministry of Testing Auckland. So that's happening on the 8th of August. So if you can get yourself to Auckland in New Zealand, please do check that out. We also have another meetup in Accra. Fantastic. On the 29th of July. So that's next Monday. Oh, so getting quick on that one. I seem to remember, although I should check this, that it is also available as an online meetup for folks who are interested. All of our events are available on ministryoftesting.com/events. So yeah, do keep your eyes and ears out for that page. There's always some events happening in the community. I'm talking about celebrating the community. We are slowly but surely building out a brilliant set of collections related to important topics. And this is a wonderful way, think of a collection as a way to celebrate all the cool stuff that the community are up to. And a little tip, I would recommend if you go on the collections page, so ministryoftesting.com/collections, if you do a keyword search for the community's guide to, try that keyword search, the community's guide to, you will see that we've got 12 collections. I think actually we put on live today, so that'll make it 13 really powerful collections on various topics. So I think the latest one that went live, and I'm just checking my notes here, is the community's guide to testing in production. We also made some updates to the community's guide to test automation as well. So do go check out the collections. It's a great way to learn and also a great way to spot who in the community is doing a great job contributing. And those with eagle eyes may have spotted that Sarah Deary, our learning and development specialist at Ministry of Testing, has joined the stage. No pressure to say anything, Sarah, but as Sarah is an admin on this account, that they do appear and are available to speak instantly. Hey, Sarah.
I did not know that that would happen. In all
No, it's all good. It's all good. Thanks for joining us, Sarah. That's lovely to see you. So, yeah, Sarah does amazing things with the community, supporting any member who wants to contribute to Ministry of Testing, whether that's writing an article, recording on-demand courses that we are looking for more folks to get involved in that, plus many, many other things. So Sarah is leading our efforts to build out an essentials course. So this is really one to watch. We are building out a very, very powerful essentials certification where you can get Ministry of Testing certified with the community, for the community, if you are new to testing or if you have colleagues of yours that are new to testing, you could invite them to get involved. So yeah, do keep watching the space on the essentials course. It's very exciting. Lots of good stuff happening with the community behind the scenes. Okay, jumping back to what else has been happening in the community. So we're talking about contributors. We pay everyone who contributes to Ministry of Testing in some form or another, depending on the type of contribution. And there are a number of people, and I'm not going to call them out because they don't want to be called out, but we've had three people this week have donated to the scholarship fund. So they have done things for Ministry of Testing. We paid them money and they've not taken the cash. They've said, you know what, I'm going to put that money back into the Ministry of Testing scholarship fund. And this scholarship fund is available for folks who aren't in a position to purchase, say, a ticket to Test Bash, which is our annual conference, or perhaps they're not in a position to pay for a professional membership with the Ministry of Testing. So they can apply to that scholarship fund. And this money has come from the community, people donating their fees. So shout out to those folks. We see, we hear you, we know who you are. And we're very, very grateful that you give back to the community in this way. It was cool to see Tobias Geyer celebrating his Pride 2024 testing t-shirt available in the Ministry of Testing shop, so store.ministryoftesting.com. Do check it out. It's a t-shirt for all year round. It is fantastic. So nice one, Tobias, sharing on LinkedIn, proudly wearing his Pride 2024 testing t-shirt. Something else that we've introduced to the community is badges. So if you like getting badges for doing cool stuff, then if you are a member of Ministry of Testing, do head over to your My Ministry of Testing area. So that's ministryoftesting.com/my-MOT. Click on the button that says My Badges and see what badges you have already achieved and eventually will be able to achieve. It's a new initiative, again, led by Sarah, who's up on stage with us now, to celebrate people in another way. So, for example, if you've read a certain number of articles on the Ministry of Testing site, you'll get a badge for it, and you can keep on getting more badges for the more articles you read. If you're involved in the club, which is our forum, you'll get a badge for that. If you are committing to your learning and development by purchasing a professional membership, you will get a badge for that. And there's many more badges to come. So it's early days with this feature, but we're very excited to celebrate folks in this way with a cool badge system. So go check them out, share your badges on LinkedIn, and see how many more you can get. It's very exciting. So AJ, I wonder if it's worth, because I'm looking at our notes here and there's all sorts of stuff been happening on CrowdStrike. I wonder if you want to join me now on stage and perhaps share some of your thoughts and observations on what's been happening with CrowdStrike. This week, there's been lots of reflections. There's been the report that the company has officially put out and what that means for testing and the testing community and wider developer community. Yeah, just wondered, AJ, if you'd be up for sharing some thoughts on that, and then we can open it up to the audience.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm AJ Wilson. I am a trend lead for Ministry of Testing based in the UK near London. But just before I go into CrowdStrike, I just want to say Sarah Deary, our amazing learning and development specialist, she always says about the fact that she's not a tester, but she secretly is. She's really good at finding like aspect ratio issues, if content containers aren't aligned, just loads of little things that you wouldn't think people would pick up. And she does. It's amazing. So we love collaborating with her when it comes to testing and all those kind of topics. She knows a lot more than she realizes. So we love you, Sarah.
Thank you. I've absorbed it over the years, haven't I?
Like a sponge. Yeah. But back to CrowdStrike. I think this is a really great topic for people to contribute that are listening in if they feel comfortable. One of the things I've noticed just in the last 3 days is the amount of conspiracy theories coming out. So where CrowdStrike released their official document saying that the bug was caused by a content issue and the test tool that tests the content, they haven't elaborated if it's a third party or an internal built piece of equipment or software. But there's other things coming from people who work in CrowdStrike who are speculating in the other companies saying that potentially it was a hack and they're covering it up. So I'm really keen to listen into what people think is happening or what they know about what's happened, or even if they were potentially affected by it. I know that we mentioned it quickly last Friday, but some of these things take a while for people to feel the impact. There's like a ripple effect. So there might be some people who were impacted, but not until 3 or 4 days after. So that's really interesting. I find that kind of flow of data quite good to talk about. So if anyone wants to cover that, just feel free to pop your hand up. And if you don't want to talk about CrowdStrike as well, because it's been all over the news for the last week solidly, feel free to raise your hand and ask any questions about other topics if you're open to work. The reason I'm mentioning open to work is tying back to what Simon said. When we hold these events, we can see your image, but we don't see the little green hoop that says open to work. So it's not clear for people networking on this session. So if you are open to work, tag Ministry of Testing and we'll share that for you and we'll try and help you in what way we can in the community.
Absolutely. And just jumping back to CrowdStrike, as it is, it really has been everywhere this week, which is fascinating, and understandably so, given the numbers that were impacted. And I think I liked, AJ, you started a thread on the club called "Were You Directly Impacted by the CrowdStrike Bug?" So that's interesting. We haven't as yet had anyone say, "Yes, I was directly impacted." But I think, as you say, AJ, over time, understanding the ripple effect, and maybe people will have connections to folks who have genuinely been affected by it and what it meant for them on a day-to-day basis and what it means now.
One of the great things I've been seeing being talked on LinkedIn, Stack Overflow, other areas like Dev2, especially in the club, is risk storming, understanding risks, business continuity. Other topics are disaster recovery. What do we do if this happens? How do we get back from it? Rollback testing, another thing that was missed with CrowdStrike. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to see the report, but some of the things that they had that they want to start doing moving forward seems like basics to me. And it feels like over time, because they're so used to delivering quickly, they've forgotten about some of the grassroots parts of testing. Things that they think, oh, that can't go wrong. Those tests always pass. There's no problem there. When potentially, if they did a deeper dive, they could have watermelon tests. Watermelon tests are, for anyone that does automation testing, where the tests are green, they're passing. But then you realize if you change the code, similar to doing TDD refactoring or characterization or mutation testing, you realize that the test shouldn't be passing. Something's wrong with the test. Or the code's not there. So why is it passing? The test is for mobile, but you're not actually running the test on mobile, those kind of things. So there is potential for all sorts of issues that haven't been unearthed yet with CrowdStrike. So that's quite a good topic to discuss at the moment as well, just in terms of what I've seen on social media. I don't know if you've had conversations with people you know, Simon, but we were chatting this morning in one of my groups of friends about postmortems, and they'd love to be a fly in the wall or in the war room, as they call it, at CrowdStrike, and see what was discussed and how it was handled.
Yeah, it would be, I mean, I've run postmortems in the past, and I'm not saying that to brag, but more just like, I know how these things can get heated, and it, you know, it really is a lot about managing emotions and reminding people of the prime directive of, like, you know, people made decisions and with the information they had, the priorities they had, et cetera, et cetera. So, oh my goodness me. Yeah, that would be, it would be a fascinating meeting to be part of and see how it was led and how it was managed and how there wasn't finger pointing or blaming, which actually reminds me, I saw a post from Cassandra H. Leung, a wonderful contributor to the community and previous TestBash speaker. Cassandra, so I'll include a link to their blog post in Monday's newsletter. So that's a reminder to sign up to the newsletter if you're not signed up. So ministryoftesting.com/newsletter. But I will link to this blog post. And Cassandra's key takeaways, this is what I really thought was cool. And they do a deep dive into their thoughts on it. Takeaways were the following: focus on finding solutions, not assigning blame, which I thought was brilliant. Quality is everyone's responsibility. See something, say something. Don't trust automation blindly, which I thought was very powerful. It doesn't stop at test cases. Explore to uncover more. It's like, wow. And there's a lot of talk about exploratory testing and techniques in that blog post. And this one, which is a bit of a tongue twister, but I will do my best to say it. Test that your tests test what you think they test. So I guess related to watermelon there, AJ. And then think beyond testing activities and the system under test to further improve quality. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible advice and recommendations. So maybe we need to find a way to get Cassandra's blog in the hands of the folks at CrowdStrike. And that's with no disrespect to the folks at CrowdStrike. I imagine they're having an incredibly tough time right now. But perhaps they need some sort of support or you know, there's some information that could be shared with them that might be helpful to the folks who are part of the team there. But yeah, Cassandra, great job on that blog post. So folks, we got another 40 or so minutes to have a good old chat. So if you do want to pop up on stage, as AJ has shared already, you don't have to talk about CrowdStrike. This isn't the CrowdStrike podcast today. This is This Week in Testing. And, you know, maybe there's something you want to celebrate about what's been happening in your world of testing right now. You want to do a shout out to another community member. Perhaps you've learned something, or perhaps you've, you know, tried out a new tool that you want to talk about. I see Greg. Thanks for putting your hand back up again, Greg. And thank you for waiting patiently. Let's bring you up on stage. Hello, Greg. It's good to see you again. Welcome back to This Week in Testing. How's your week been?
It's been really good. Thank you. I actually decided to drive home real quick. I was at another event and thought if I could get home and be a lot easier on my equipment at home, but it's been really good. I always enjoy sharing with you all, and I've invited my team to be here today as well. So a bunch of the ladies from Rwanda are here that I get to train every day in the work of automation testing. This whole CrowdStrike, by the way, I wrote a post last night. Some of you have already been responding. I initially thought it was called CloudStrike. Isn't that ironic? And I noticed I'm not the only one that thought that, but getting back into it, I recognize this CrowdStrike. And as a tester first and then an automation person, I'm always curious what I can learn from this event. I'm sure many of you are. The hard part is this is a time when it's easy for us to just, you know, look at it, kind of point fingers and say, well, if I had to do it, I would do it different. There's maybe even a tendency to do that, but probably the best takeaway for our community is to ask, what can we learn? And I think AJ kind of pointed out this in what she was sharing a moment ago, which is a community, maybe going back to some of the basics. So here's one for us to maybe chew on. There's this concept called the pesticide paradox, some of you've heard of. And it's when we test things the same way over and over again, we can become blind to maybe thinking outside of the box and stepping away. The concept behind the pesticide paradox is if you continue to test exactly the same way, you can miss some obvious defects and you get comfortable with, you know, it's green at the end of the test or whatever. I even talked about this with my automation engineers, that they go back and enhance their test or revisit it from a different perspective, and they continue to look at ways they can enhance their automation to ask some additional questions. And it would be interesting to find out, is anybody thinking different through what we've learned from CrowdStrike and the testing they've gone through, of maybe thinking a little different about the way they're going to test something that they didn't just a week or two ago?
Great, great reflection and great point there. AJ, do you want to jump in? I do see some folks putting their hands up as well, but yeah, feel free to dive on in before we bring folks up.
I was just going to make a quick note on something I mentioned. I realized I didn't explain what it meant, and I used the term postmortem. So bouncing off what Greg said about lessons learned, it's not the same thing. It's a postmortem is where you have a structured agenda, similar to like, it leads on from a retro where you look at what went wrong, but it's a blameless environment. It's not, this is your fault. It's about saying you handled this part of the situation really well. You did really good in this part. What was the root cause? What actions do we have to improve? Do we need to look at monitoring? Why wasn't that picked up? Is this something we used to do, but we don't do now? That kind of thing. So I just wanted to clarify that for anyone listening who hadn't experienced a postmortem before. On what Greg said about going back to basics, I completely agree. One of the things that I've found over the last couple of decades is that people forget to delete tests and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Their pipeline goes from a 20 minutes deployment to maybe sometimes 90 minutes in some cases, or one instance we had last week, someone discussed it took 6 hours. So things like that, I think going back and looking at what you've got, is it necessary anymore? Is it needed? Does it actually test anything anymore? They're really good points, Greg.
Yeah, wonderful, AJ. Well, let's, Greg, please do stick around on stage with us. We're going to get Ben up on stage and David as well. So we've got Ben Doan and David Shaw joining us with the powers of LinkedIn. Let's get David up on stage as well. But let's jump in. Ben, I think, had their hand up first, or his hand up first. So, Ben, yeah, how's your week been? And feel free to jump on in.
Hey, Simon. Yep, Ben Doan here. My week in testing's been pretty good. I very much also enjoyed the test exchange this week, which was pretty cool. And we had some great conversations about automation at the test exchange. And I'll share one of the reflections from that in a moment. Because it's relevant to this. And while it's not directly about CrowdStrike, I really liked what you were saying, Greg, about the pesticide paradox. And one thing I have found from my own experience, and it's got nothing directly to do with automated tests, but that is the power of charters and scenarios in exploratory testing. I have run with groups of people, say, 2 or 3 different charters. In fact, at one point it was maybe 6 or 7 on exactly the same version of the same software with the same people and with a different mission. We found all sorts of things that we'd completely just not seen on the previous testing sessions. And having that really intentional looking at it from a different perspective for a different reason, using a different heuristic, And then once you see it, you're like, oh, how? Like, we even took a screenshot of this yesterday and it was wrong and we didn't even see it, even though we were raising a different issue and we were looking straight through it. So, yeah, I think it's really important. It's the pesticide paradox, but it's also, there's something more than that, which is using a variety of thinking is so core to being able to find different problems.
Ben, I like this idea too, that I sometimes talk about it as persona testing. I will get the test engineers to think about different kinds of users. Think about the admin users of these companies they had to perform the upgrade and the kinds of things that interest them the most or would be concerns to them, and then try to run through that scenario similar. So this is such a great way of stepping back and finding a whole new series of defects that could have been there all along, and you're just like, how did we miss this before, right? And then they're right there. It's what a great, great word of advice. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, that's a great one. And with different personas, you're effectively thinking about a different part of the quality because you're thinking about a different person who the value matters to, and that really changes the perspective. And I really, it works really well.
So when you're saying about testing personas, at what part of the life cycle of the product do you mean? Are you talking about when you're going into shifting right and observability monitoring and then looking at the real world usage patterns and behaviors that are happening in production and then going based on this persona, we need to go back and look at this, this test isn't relevant anymore? Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah, I think it can be a lot of varieties like that, AJ. It could be, in this case, we might look at it from the sysadmin or the folks that are going to be performing the upgrades, what matter most to them, how they might perform this, whether it's an automated process or something that has manual intervention. That's a really unique persona for someone like CrowdStrike to take and actually decide, hey, for this moment, hey, this week, guys, let's put on this persona from the sysadmin's perspective and test from that. Let's find what we encounter. So yeah, I think there's lots of personas, depends on the app. If you're going to be working in a mobile app or any application from that perspective, the test engineer can kind of get stuck in this mindset, which again goes back to the, you know, there's a number of names for this, but the pesticide paradox is the one that I know of. And then you wind up, by the way, there's an interesting side effect that can come out of this. I find some QA managers will put a lot of emphasis on the number of tests that were run or, you know, the quantity of test cases. That encourages the wrong thing necessarily from the test engineers. And AJ, I think you mentioned this about deleting some tests. It's not a bad idea to go through every once in a while and kind of, you know, clean out the shed, if you will. Look at what's been there and it's got kind of dusty and it needs to be either rewritten from a different persona or whatever. But, you know, go through and clear some things out and decide to rewrite instead of just building this monstrous, you know, we've all seen these notebooks that are 3 inches thick. Who's ever going to get through that? Better to have, you know, a couple dozen tests that are from a fresh perspective, maybe, than keep the legacy regression ones that are really spot on and continue to evolve the test suite. But a good test manager or quality manager is going to help a team to come with grips with that and not look at just now we ran 5,000 test cases, you know, but we missed the most obvious thing, to Ben's point.
Yeah, I don't want to, I realize that David's not had a chance to say hello, but I've got more questions, Greg, of course, because I always do, because I'm really interested in personas and archetypes. So once you do shift right, and you're looking at stuff in production, you need that archetype data to update your personas. But I can come back to that later. I'm really interested to meet David as well. Hello, David.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for asking me on stage, or not asking me, but allowing me on stage. This is the first session I've been to. I did listen to, I think it was last week's or the week before. So I'm just keen to become a regular attendee and get to know some people. I'm a tester based in Scotland.
Whereabouts in Scotland? We might know each other. I'm joking.
So, I live between Burnt Island and Fife and Edinburgh. Half of my week is in Edinburgh and the other half is in Fife.
Oh, I love Edinburgh. I haven't been to Fife.
It's beautiful. Burnt Island is directly opposite Edinburgh, and the Fife Coast has got some lovely beaches, which I've only really realized in the last 2 or 3 years when I spent some time traveling up that coast in my camper van during the lockdown period.
For anyone listening that's not in the UK, Scotland has got some stunning beaches, but even when it's 26 degrees, you might still have to wear a wetsuit in the water because it's in the North Sea, if anyone ever travels there.
Exactly, and it can change multiple times in the same day. So if you start off in shorts, you might end up in 3 layers of winter clothes by the end of the day.
Hmm. Do you have any thoughts on what happened with CrowdStrike, David?
Yeah, I mean, I always go to this quote that, that I pinned to a lot of my emails, and it's, you know, there's never enough time to do it right, but there's always enough time to do it over. And I think that's quite pertinent in this situation. I don't know the circumstances, obviously, of the bug and the decisions that were made, but I think there is always that pressure to meet deadlines, and it could be that there's complacency been built into this particular issue. And as someone had mentioned about repeating the same tests over and over, maybe they've worked in the past, but suddenly, you know, on this occasion, it's not flushed out the bug as it would have done maybe 99 times out of 100 in the past. So I guess there's a few things I was just wanting to touch on, and I don't know what other people's experiences regarding sort of risk-based testing, but I never think that there's a uniform approach to risk-based techniques within the planning or ahead of testing. It can be a sort of token gesture to apply, you know, like a Moscow rating, for example, to tests, or to have a informal conversation with a developer to understand, you know, maybe where defects have clustered in the past. But it's, for the organizations I've worked for, it's never been a standard approach, and it's certainly not been embedded within the test approaches, you know, as fundamentally as I think it should be. So risk-based testing and having that more central before we even begin the test execution phase. So that's one thing. I've been in the industry a long time, and sometimes I'll fall foul of this sort of next point. And when under pressure, like to meet a deadline, I fall into that trap of I want to see a sea of green in my test runs, rather than welcoming, you know, a sea of red or orange, whereby tests are failing and I'm actually finding bugs. So sometimes I think, and this is where I've really got to stop and go back to my roots of exploratory testing. That's probably the number one type of testing that I enjoy, is exploratory, without any formal scripts, without the sort of guardrails in place where I can go in and just flush out obvious defects based on business knowledge, if I've been in a company for a long time, or just intuition. So rather than thinking about all the new fads or trends or automation and AI is obviously it's where the focus is just now, but fundamentally I'm a manual tester and an exploratory tester from a functional standpoint. So I think that's where I have to get back to the roots and really welcoming that sea of red, which I think it's maybe psychologically, like maybe from a project manager's perspective, when they're reporting, you know, red, amber, green, you always want to see green, things are on track. And I have to sort of flip that around and think, well, if I'm flushing out defects, I'm doing my job, rather than just reporting that testing is green. So that's a few things that I want to
So what do you do? Because I love the whole red, green, watermelon thing, because I used to work with a really great tester, Gareth, a company that I used to work with, Gareth Waterhouse, and we used to play this game with all the dev teams, all the engineering teams, and it was called Killing Kittens, and we do overnight runs at say 1 o'clock in the morning, just because it was a low impact on the environments and cost, just to see if tests were flaky and how we can keep improving. Our like motto was always be ready for peak every day of the year, don't just wait for Black Friday type thing. So when we had a dead kitten, as we called it, no one wants to see a dead kitten. Or if it was amber, we knew it was dying, so flaky. And then you'd put on your little glittery jacket we had in the office, and you'd have to save that kitten, bring it back to life, and find out what was wrong with it. and then determine if it was going to be put down forever. So I know it sounds morbid, but it was a really fun way of getting people engaged in understanding, like, the need to fix these things and to improve the pipeline. Which leads on to my next part about, you mentioned risk-based testing. Have you ever heard of risk storming?
Not that specific terminology, no.
Oh, I love it. So I learned about it actually through Ministry of Testing, again, through another great tester, Stuart Crocker. He gave me a pack of Test Sphere as a card deck. And what it does is allows you to have conversations about the different aspects of quality and testing. So you can have it really informal, like you said, where you're sitting with your team or other developers, engineers, and you pick out cards and you apply what cards you think are appropriate for what you're working on. And you can do it really early on. It doesn't have to wait until the code's delivered. It can be before you write the code. And it's a really good way of understanding where your risk areas are in the business. What value do you want to kind of get? What do you want to save? If there's people in your team that have never thought about security testing before, it's a really good way of going, oh, well, if you've never done security testing, maybe we should do threat modeling first, so you understand the risks around bad actors, encryption, passwords, that kind of thing. And it's a really good ground, like grassroots way of getting knowledge to get you into risk-based testing, so you understand the difference between risks and issues, that type of thing.
Okay, yeah, sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. I don't know if anyone up on the floors, the virtual floors, used it before.
I think I have that deck of cards. I think I've used it before with my team. Of course, for those of you that have followed me, you know that I have my METS methodology at METSTesting.com. It's designed to be a risk-based approach, and it's meant to be very a living testing methodology. You know, it's used a lot of places. We use it at our company and as well as many others. But it's around this idea that you identify high-level categories. So it could be around authentication. It could be around, maybe cart features, checkout, tenders, those sort of things. And then you begin to identify at a very high level what would be the most critical things. And what's really great is when you're in the context, like David said, he's very familiar with the product now. And so once you have an expertise or a subject matter expertise of the product, the METS can get more and more mature over time, where you begin to identify, like, if I only had an hour, these would be the things I would test. But if I had 4 hours, I might be able to go into these other areas. I think what I like about the METS concept is it sets an expectation for management and others that one of the hard things that we face as testers is the testing miracle, that we can find all defects. And that's simply not possible. And so it sets the expectation, look, I have a strategy for even when I've been given an hour, a day, or a month that I can approach. And it can evolve over time. So, for instance, a METS based on CrowdStrike would be to go back and review, what did we miss? What are the criticals now that we would put into place? And then it continues to get better over time.
Hello. If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind picking up on a couple of things you said there, David, was very cool. And I'm going to go look into this METS stuff from Greg, because I haven't looked at that yet. And that's interesting. One of the things that I wanted to share from earlier, which was about a conversation we actually had in the test exchange this week, and that was about the fact that often as teams or as an industry, or especially hiring managers, not that that's as relevant to this conversation, we often introduce automation because we think we need better automation, or because automation is the thing we need to do. But one of the things that's often missed, or as you've mentioned earlier, is thought of once and then you don't go back to it, is why are we actually doing this thing in the first place? And this might fit in with your the test strategy stuff you were talking about, Greg. And I really think that it's like, cool, there was a test tool CrowdStrike we're using. Fair enough. That's a good idea. But it feels like, oh, that test tool was just, I don't know, it was set up and it was running and it was heavily relied upon. But how many people were really thinking, okay, what is the impact of the bugs this thing does or doesn't find, right? What is the purpose of this tool? Why is it here? Why are these particular tests doing the thing? Like, not why is this particular bit of automation in place, but like you were kind of saying, David, that it's that risk-based approach. The way I approach it is, like, why are we building the software in the first place? So I try and think of it in that product kind of focus of, okay, why are we actually delivering this piece of software? Who's it important to? Why does it matter that it's available? And once you figure out why it matters that it's available, then you can start thinking about, okay, what are the threats against it being available and being useful for the users? And the threat modeling stuff from a security point of view and the risk storming stuff from a risk point of view are awesome. But when it comes to the exploratory testing, one of the things I love to do is try and find as many different people from different teams or different roles to pair with and just do a short session, anywhere between 30 and 90 minutes. And I'll basically tailor the charter to whatever their expertise is. So I'll might pair up with a data scientist or one of our analysts. And the idea then, so I'm effectively using them as my persona, as my stakeholder, right? So rather than going, okay, let's test the UI and let's make sure it looks pretty, I'll go, okay, let's make sure this thing's generating the data you expect or that's important. Because that's, I'm going to use your domain expertise and my testing expertise, and we'll combine those things together. And then I'll go and find someone who knows about the medical safety. I'll go, okay, let's have a medical safety based session. What would you find risky about this feature from a medical point of view? Okay, well, we'll make a charter around that. So I really find, like, going and finding other human beings who are involved in the project and have their own domain knowledge, their own role knowledge, and pairing up with them and doing the exploration. It's brilliant from an exploratory testing point of view. And it's exactly the kind of thing that is missing if your test strategy focuses only on automation. And when you're building that automation, you dream it up purely with conversations with the engineers and the engineering team and the people who know code, rather than creating a strategy based on, okay, what's important? What are we testing? Okay, can we build tools that actually help give us confidence that those important things are found, are being exercised, are being used? Maybe they can't be fully automated. Maybe we just have to have tools to get the system in the right state and then put it in front of a human, right? So it's like more about improving the quality and accelerating the testing. Whoever's doing that testing, whether it's a developer, a tester, or an automator, whoever it is, And then defocusing on the, okay, have we got the right test suite? Have we got the right number of test cases? And I find that as the antidote to the thing you were saying earlier of, oh yeah, well, we're going to write more and more tests and it's going to take longer and longer to run. It's like, no, that's not the point at all. Sorry, I'm rambling a bit, but I hope that was useful.
Definitely, Ben. So just on that, I totally agree with everything you said there. It just reminded me of a time fairly recently. I was working for an organization and I was given responsibility for executing tests across different phases, so system testing, integration, and UAT for the same functionality that was being delivered. And like, the first thing I thought was, well, if I've got a knowledge gap or a blind spot, then that's going to carry all the way through every phase of testing. So why don't we swap? So I'll start with, you know, a suite of tests, whether it's integration testing or system testing, and then when we get to UAT, you know, someone else will pick that up. This was a smaller company, so they didn't have a UAT test team as such, and we were asked to undertake all the testing on behalf of the business as well. So it was quite a flawed model, and it's not something I've experienced before, but just recognizing that we all have deficiencies in knowledge in certain areas, or skills in certain areas, and being able to share a piece of work around the team so that you've got different eyes looking at it, even if it's just internal to the test team, then I think that's a much better approach than taking the testing from A to Z as one resource. because I just feel that no matter how many defects I find, I will have blind spots. So yeah, I just wanted to add that on to what you were saying, Ben.
I was going to mention talking about business simulation testing, David, because that's really helpful for that scenario. Are you in the Ministry of Testing Club?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, like I said, I've attended one of these sessions. I think it was last week or the week before. I'm not sure what I've signed up to or what I haven't. It's via LinkedIn. so I'll need to...
If you go to ministryoftesting.com, there's a club area, and you don't have to be on the paid subscription to be part of it. And it's really good. You can ask questions to the community. You can talk about things. Okay. And it doesn't matter how small the question or how big it is, or even if it's just like, I can't unblock this in TestRunner, how do I do it? Or big questions like, I've got this problem with my career, can anyone give me advice? You can ask loads of stuff there. The reason I'm not going to go into business simulation testing is because I can see we've got three hands up now. We've got Anna, Amandine, and Manish. So I don't know if we want to bring anyone up, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bunches of time.
yeah, of course. We've got about 10 minutes before we have to wrap up today. And it's amazing. Yeah, very much grateful for what's been shared on stage so far. Lots of good stuff to reflect on, to more discussions to be had for sure. But yeah, I'm curious. I know, thank you for waiting so patiently with your hands up. Let's get Amandine up on stage, and then we'll bring Manish and then Anna after that. So Amandine, let's get you up on stage. Welcome, Amandine. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for waiting so patiently there with your virtual hand up. Yeah, how's your week in testing been?
Hi, thank you for welcoming me. It's my first time here, and I'm learning tests, actually. I'm not professional yet. I just want to say first that I think Manish was holding his or her hand before me. So maybe it would be, I don't know, more fair for this person to be before me.
The reason we brought you up, Amandine, is because we can't see that you are currently in the testing profession, and we thought you might have a really important question. So we wanted to give you that opportunity. So please go ahead. Don't worry.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Manish is lovely. He won't mind at all, honestly.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm new in this area a bit, but I like it very much. And I heard you talking about different things, which I'm more or less familiar with. And especially with the exploratory testing, this is the thing that I'm learning this week. I've been browsing on the internet to find some information about it, because I find it a bit confusing. Because in one hand, like, I think Ben talked about charters and like the fact that it's not so, it's not so... It's not anything, like, you're not doing anything on the site, like not thinking about it. And on the other hand, it's not like that structured. So I was a bit wondering if someone would like to answer me what's his approach to exploratory testing and how he can do it, because I've been trying to do that. And I'm a bit like, kind of structured. I like things to be structured, and I'm also very creative, but I don't know how to approach exploratory testing. It's very confusing to me.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of people are learning at the moment as well. You're not alone, definitely not alone. David, you did mention earlier that you come from an exploratory testing background. I don't know if that's something you want to answer with Amandine. No pressure. He was blown away by your question, Amandine.
Apologies, I'd navigated away from the screen, and I was struggling to get back to unmute myself. With regards to exploratory testing, obviously, I mean, people may think it's just a case of logging onto the system and navigating various menus, looking at different processes and documenting the defects that you find. Where I've been more successful is using the sort of charter-based approach. So it might be a particular feature or a collection of features that I want to look at, a particular business process, or a part of a process. So I will generally time box my exploratory testing. I mean, there's different times that people can do. I think generally between 60 minutes and 2 hours is what I would normally recommend. I think that's enough time to flush out a number of bugs, but also not too long, where that sort of focus starts to wane. So yeah, it's just having a bit of a think in advance, completing your charter, like what's your goal for the session. Could be that you identify maybe an area where there's been bugs in the past, or let's say there's certain documentation that gets generated off the back of a process and you want to look at how those are triggered. So your exploratory charter may start with that focus, but then there may be other bugs that you find along the way, just as part of testing the journey leading up to producing a document, for example. So you do get some bugs that you weren't intending to see. But for me, it's more about stepping back from the formal test scripts, which sometimes you can run on autopilot as a manual tester, and just thinking about specific areas of the system or the application that you feel need a deeper look at. Maybe the formal test pack doesn't give enough attention to a particular area of the application, so you give a bit more dedicated attention to it. So I don't think it's, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. I certainly don't use complicated charters for doing it, but I do try and have a plan in place before I run the test session.
I'd like to speak into this too, because I teach this concept a lot to my test engineers in training, how to transition into exploratory testing. Usually I have found you have the opposite problem personally, where you wind up having everybody doing exploratory and there's no strategy. That's actually been my experience. But because it's enjoyable to do, as most of us really enjoy exploratory testing, I really don't know many testers that don't like it, because it has this freedom to go ahead and dive in where your intuition leads you. It's really interesting to get technical folks and non-technical folks to do exploratory. They will find different kinds of defects. I like to get in behind the code and take a peek what's going on, maybe on a website or something, and it leads me to dig in further. But someone that might not have that might feel at a deficit, but actually they bring a whole different perspective on it, because they may look at it as like someone using maybe an ATM. You know, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to try to, you know, withdraw $0 and see what happens. And they're going to try some things from a different perspective. So I like what David said about time boxing. I teach my testers to do the same thing. I always start off by training new test engineers in the craft of test planning. And again, I bring in the METS process with them, where they begin to identify categories that lead them to critical, high, medium, and low test to perform. But then at some point in that training, I say, now we're going to go ahead and actually carve out, maybe to David's point, an hour or 2 hours. I tell them, we're going to time box 2 hours, and you're going to dive in solely around the authentication piece. And that's what we're going to work on for a couple hours. And it's remarkable the defects that pop up there when you allow testers to really dive in. So That is a technique, but I really like the idea that you couple it with a certain amount of allotted time. I think that's the key to being really effective with exploratory testing. So it just doesn't turn out to be what everybody does for the rest of the time. You know, that's all they do.
I think we could have a whole live event just on exploratory testing and what different people think it means and how they do it. I think it's really interesting.
Yes, please.
I'm just conscious, Simon, we've got 3 minutes. And
yes, talking about time boxing, we do have to time box these sessions, because it could be this week in testing in one day. We do a 24-hour podcast. Maybe we'll experiment with that one day and see what happens. But yeah, Amandine, you know, we welcome you to the community. It's absolutely brilliant that you've come up on stage today. So thank you so much. And what we will do, we'll remind folks, not just yourself, Amandine, but for everyone else who's listening today, we do have a dedicated collection. I talked about collections earlier on, great way to celebrate the community and a great way to learn. If you go to ministryoftesting.com, type in the community's guide to exploratory testing in the search box. We've collated 32 items. There's talks, there's short, sharp kind of real life exploratory testing sessions. We have lots of articles as well to help people get started with the world of exploratory testing. So absolutely recommend that. There's some really good stuff in there. So let's wrap up for today. Thank you to everyone who has been part of this this session. We are very grateful for you being with us. And Amandine, apologies, I just pressed the wrong button there. I was attempting to put you on mute and I think I put you back into the listening crowd. So apologies for that. If you wondered why you just suddenly been booted off the stage, it wasn't intentional there. But yeah, folks, thanks so much for joining us. A couple of things to mention before we do sign off. So yeah, do check out collections. There's so much good stuff in there. And we're doing our very best here at Ministry of Testing to bring all that together to make it much more accessible. We've got loads of stuff going on. So we briefly mentioned Test Bash, our annual conference, in-person conference. That's happening in September. So a couple of months away for that. And actually, Beren van Diel is running a number of risk storming sessions. So AJ mentioned earlier on about risk storming. So if you can get there, it's on day one throughout the day. Beren is introducing people to risk storming. Do get stuck in. He's a fantastic teacher and tutor and will help folks understand the risk storming and how it works. Definitely worth checking out there. And also just another reminder about our weekly newsletter. So a lot of the stuff that we discuss in This Week in Testing ends up in the weekly newsletter. We aim to send that every Monday morning, UK time. It's a good roundup of everything that we observe here at Ministry of Testing that's happening in the testing community. You can sign up to it at ministryoftesting.com/newsletter. Okay, folks, well, I think it is time for us to wrap up. We have hit the hour. Thank you to our listeners today and super grateful for everyone who's been up on stage. And of course, thank you to the wonderful co-host, AJ Wilson. So thanks, AJ. Always enjoy sharing hosting responsibilities with you. And yeah, folks, do enjoy the rest of your day wherever you may be and have a lovely weekend. Bye for now.